Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palka reporting. Russia backs the Syrian government. Syrian government troops advanced under cover of Russian airstrikes Monday. In the heaviest fighting in weeks, government forces battled rebels in a strategic area in the central province of Hama. The fighting was focused on the village of Kafar Nabuta. Syria's army command says it captured the village, but activists say the rebels repelled the attack. Meanwhile, U.S.-led coalition forces continued to strike Islamic State targets on Monday, destroying tactical units in two areas. The U.S. Central Command says the coalition conducted 18 strikes in Iraq. The man trying to get the sides to negotiate, UN Syria envoy Staffan de Mistura, Monday, told a news conference that he would hold talks in Russia on Tuesday and then head to Washington.
It is clear that the Russian military intervention in Syria has indeed introduced new dynamics into the situation. And that means that making forecast speculations are going to be, for the moment, difficult.
Meanwhile, the European Council on Monday called for Russia to immediately end military attacks in Syria. Amidst a rise in Palestinian violence against Israelis, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu opened Israel's parliament with a declaration that the country will overcome the knife terror. Mr. Netanyahu again blamed Hamas, the Palestinian National Authority, and a group called the Islamic Movement for inciting violence. He said Palestinians are spreading what he called the lie that Israel is planning to take over a key religious site in East Jerusalem, revered by both Muslims and Jews. Meanwhile, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas played the wave of violence on what he called acts of aggression by Israeli settlers. This is VOA News. Opposition candidates are calling for Guinea's presidential election to be annulled, saying the vote on Sunday was rigged to favor incumbent leader Alpha Condé. The seven opposition candidates held a news conference Monday to denounce the election as a grand deception. The candidates said they'd recorded a number of irregularities in the voting, including falsified results, ballot box stuffing, and intimidation and arrests by security forces. Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu said Monday the Islamic State is the prime suspect in Saturday's double suicide bombing in Ankara. The blast killed at least 97 people. The Prime Minister said authorities are close to identifying one of the bombers and that evidence points to a certain group. No one has claimed responsibility for the blast that targeted a peace rally. A crowd of people marching down a street in Ankara as Turkish authorities face accusations from citizens angry over the attack. Dorian Jones reports.
The government faces increasing accusations of negligence, if not collusion, in Turkey's worst terrorist attack, charges it vehemently denies. The main opposition parties are blaming the government policy of backing radical Islamist groups fighting the Syrian government for contributing to the attack. Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu declared the Islamic State group is the prime suspect and authorities are close to identifying one of the bombers. Dozens of suspected Islamic State militants have been arrested, but it's not clear if they are connected to the bombing. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
A new study is warning that the world's fisheries and ocean ecosystems are threatened even more than previously thought by rising carbon dioxide levels, and the global marine food chain could collapse. VOA correspondent Steve Harmon reports from Bangkok.
After reviewing data from hundreds of published experiments, two Australian professors have concluded that very few marine species will escape the negative effects of increasing carbon dioxide, leading to a species collapse from the top of the food chain down. Ivan Nagelkirchen is an associate professor of the Southern Seas Ecology Labs at the University of Adelaide.
No species is able to sustain itself in an environment where there is not sufficient food, and these effects are only exacerbated as you go up the food chain.
He and his colleague realized the situation appears much worse than they had anticipated when they first started studying the impact of ocean temperature warming and acidification. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Results of the University of Adelaide study are being published on Tuesday. Joe Palka, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea's opposition parties call for fresh elections after saying Sunday's poll was marred by many abnormalities.
We need a new election. I don't know when we can have it, but for our peace, for the security, for the stability of Guinea, we need to have a new election.
Seludo Alain Diallo is leader of Guinea's main opposition, Union of Democratic Forces. The UN mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo says it looks forward to more cooperation with the government. Zimbabwe says it will not file charges against a U.S. dentist who killed Cecil the Lion. And Uganda's main opposition leader accuses the police of brutality.
Quite obviously, every, you know, right-thinking person, Ugandan or non-Ugandan, will be appalled by the actions of the police. A disgrace to humanity, what they are doing.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. Independent journalists in Zimbabwe say they feel under siege. The World Health Organization says mentally ill victims are stigmatized and discriminated against. And a South African eatery serves up American Southern cuisine. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's portion, our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of Guinea's main opposition Union of Democratic Forces party is calling for fresh elections, saying Sunday's presidential election was fraudulent. Seludo Alain Diallo says the opposition will not accept the results, which are expected to be announced Tuesday or Wednesday, because the voting was characterized by massive fraud. Another opposition leader, Sidya Touré of the Union of Republican Forces, told VOA on Sunday that more than 20% of ballot papers and 30% of envelopes were not available at polling stations, and the military came out in large numbers to vote for incumbent President Alpha Conde. Diallo said there should be new election for the peace and stability of Guinea.
I think this election is not in a good condition because the organization of this election is not good. We haven't security for our delegates in the election office. We have more problem, the material problem. We have organization problem. We have a security problem. We have more problem. We have the implication of member of government. We have a more problem for this organization. In my look at in Gawal, we have a difficult of material. We have more problem of organization, 30%, I think, in Gawal.
The results are going to be announced. So what do you think? Will you accept the results or you will not accept the results?
No, we don't we can't accept. We have more problem. We can't accept it. That's our communication today. We can't accept this result.
I hear you're calling for new elections.
We need a new election. I don't know when we can have it, but for our peace, for the security, for the stability of Guinea, we need to have a new election.
Where is the money going to come from now? You just finished another election.
I don't know if this is just a problem of money. It's a problem of voluntary. It's a problem of organization. The election of Guinea, we need just $10 or $20 million of dollars. That's not more for our peace, for our stability, for our security, for good governance, for our democracy. That's not more money.
You know, I was wondering, do you think you, the opposition, contributed to this? Because you had different candidates. If you came together with one candidate, let's say you, Seludo Alain Diallo, you would have probably beaten President Alpha Conde. Do you think you have a part to play in this?
That's not a problem of more candidates. Because if you have just one candidate for the president, that's not a solution for beating the president. Because we have a system. Our president, our government use the system for fraud. That's not a problem. If you have a more candidate, that's not a problem, I think.
Are you planning on protesting in case the results are announced? What are you going to do?
We haven't right now a planning, but I think in a few days, I think tomorrow or after tomorrow, we publish a new planning for protest.
There are those who say that the elections were conducted in a peaceful manner.
I think we need the implication of community international. We need more implication of Union African and Union European. But in Guinea, our government can't organize a good election, I think.
Seludo Alain Diallo is leader of Guinea's main opposition, Union of Democratic Forces. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, has accused President Yoweri Museveni of instigating violence against the opposition ahead of the 2016 presidential election. This comes after Ugandan police over the weekend manhandled Dr. Besigye and his entourage while they were en route to Rukungiri, about 400 kilometers from Kampala, for a Forum for Democratic Change, FDC, rally. One female member of Dr. Besigye's entourage, who is shadow secretary for environment, was stripped naked in public, tied up, and thrown in the back of a pickup truck. The police said they were simply enforcing the roadmap of the National Independent Electoral Commission. A spokesman was quoted in the local media saying Dr. Besigye was only a candidate whose nomination has not yet been endorsed by his party and therefore could not hold public rallies. But Dr. Besigye says there is no law in Uganda that bars him as a political leader from holding rallies.
This statement of the Inspector General of Police was quite obviously not based on any law, because political parties, according to our laws, are allowed to hold public meetings of the type that we were going to hold. Indeed, you can ask the Electoral Commissioner to tell you which law bars me from addressing a public meeting simply because I am an aspirant to become a candidate. Secondly, I am a leader in a political party which has legitimate functions of holding public meetings. My role in the political party is not suspended because I am an aspiring candidate.
I had a chance to watch a video of a female supporter of the FDC who was almost stripped naked by the police and handled like, thrown in the truck, something like that. Have you had a chance to see the video?
Yes, I have had a chance, and this is not just a supporter. She's a member of the National Executive Committee of our party. She's a Secretary for Environment, National Secretary for Environment of the Forum for Democratic Change. And how she was treated is extremely shocking. But this is not the first time, you know, that the Uganda police has behaved in this manner, especially towards women. And I think the intention is quite clear, not just to intimidate and harass the particular individual ladies involved, but it is intended to send a chill down the spines of all our women, to make sure that they do not attempt to become political activists, and also to cause general fear in the population. In fact, the brutality of the police, of the Uganda police, which is now quite phenomenal, is precisely intended for that purpose.
Former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi, who is also a contender for the coming election, has put out a statement to condemn the police treatment of you and your party. And he's calling for the government to take action against the police officers that were responsible for what he called brutalizing innocent Ugandans. What would you like to see happen?
Yes, the statement of the Honorable Amama Mbabazi is quite obviously pertinent and welcome. What, you know, shocks me is that these kinds of statements are not issued by people who are in government, because even him, and this has been one of my concerns, is that while he was in government until a short while back, there were, you know, heinous crimes committed by the police, similar violations of human rights, and there was not a finger raised, you know, by the Honorable Amama Mbabazi. But it's good that at least now he knows, he's living it, he knows where we've been, and it would be a good thing if those in government, his successor, you know, Dr. Rugunda and others in government, to raise a finger, because tomorrow they will be victims of the same criminality of these institutions that they are nursing now.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change in Uganda. He was speaking with me from Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Today is Tuesday, October 13th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The UN mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as MONUSCO, says it is looking forward to a full resumption of strategic cooperation with the Congolese army. As Nick Long reports for VOA from Goma in eastern DRC, the new head of MONUSCO is to arrive soon.
The UN mission in Congo put a temporary halt to its collaboration with the Congolese army, the FARDC, in February after two generals suspected of human rights abuses were placed in charge of what was supposed to have been a joint FARDC-UN operation against FDLR rebels. Citing UN human rights policy, the mission withdrew support for that operation, although it has continued supporting the army against other armed groups. Saturday, DRC Communications Minister Lambert Mende said the government is waiting to resume talks with the new head of MONUSCO, Maman Sidiku, after what he described as certain difficulties encountered with Martin Kobler, Sidiku's predecessor. Kobler had been at odds with the authorities over the army's human rights record, freedom of expression, and preparations for elections. Mende also said the government hoped the new MONUSCO chief would listen more to the government's concerns, adding there might be less of a cultural communication problem with Sidiku, who is from Niger. MONUSCO interim spokesman Charles Bamba described Mende's comment about strategic cooperation as encouraging.
We have been asking this for quite months now.
He says, we've been asking for this cooperation for some time and it's going in the right direction. We're working to make sure all misunderstandings are cleared up so that this cooperation can resume as soon as possible. The human rights concerns that forced MONUSCO to pause cooperation can be resolved, Bambara suggested. The mission will continue to apply the UN due diligence policy on human rights, he added.
And I think that we have agreed now the way to solve this.
He says the UN has some principles and the principles will not change because of a change in the persons who are implementing them. Bambara also said the mission is trying to push the electoral process in DRC and calling for the government to allocate necessary funds to the Independent Electoral Commission. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma, DRC.
Zimbabwe's Environment Minister Opa Muchinguri Kashiri says Harare will not file charges against the U.S. dentist who killed the country's famed lion, Sisal. Muchinguri backtracked on her comments a few months ago when she said Harare was going to seek Palmer's extradition to charge him for the hunt, which Harare said was illegal. But on Monday, she told Bloomberg News Agency that Palmer's papers were in order. Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force Director Johnny Rodriguez says the government must prove to the nation that the professional hunter's papers were truly in order.
I'm quite shocked to actually hear that when they come all of a sudden. I mean, he broke the law. He lured a lion out of the park. There was no quota for the area. And now all of a sudden, they're not prosecuting him. I mean, I believe there's something wrong with the justice system. Because, you know, in the first place, when they did the investigation and everything, they found there was a problem. Now all of a sudden, they're saying he didn't commit a crime or he had his papers in order. I find it very, very strange. It just means that the legal system in Zimbabwe doesn't work. The thing is, the whole world is watching, and all it sends is a wrong signal out to the other wealthy people that can actually break their law and get away with it.
Two local hunters are still facing charges for assisting Palmer in the killing of Sisal the lion. Do you think that they will also be cleared?
I think there's money talking here. I don't think anything else. It's just greed and corruption and overlooking the story. You know, they should appoint a private investigator to actually investigate this whole story and find out if these are the facts. I mean, nothing has been published. We haven't seen any documents. We haven't seen the permits and all that. So it's very hard to comment on that when, you know, nothing has been put into the public domain, which the public deserves to know.
Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force Director Johnny Rodriguez was speaking with Jonga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe program. Independent journalists in Zimbabwe say they feel under siege following statements by President Robert Mugabe's spokesman and Information Secretary George Charamba, threatening to muzzle the media for allegedly writing lies. Independent journalist Kowani Nyante says Charamba's threats are worrying.
This is very worrying coming from a senior civil servant like Charan. He's basically accusing journalists of doing their job. They can't expect journalists to just report without questioning what government does or what other opposition parties do. This is the intention of the opposition, that is the NDC, to join up with government to victimize journalists. That would be very unfortunate. I think we should take the statements very seriously, because once they say such things, usually what follows is not very good for the journalism profession.
But Mr. Nyati, there have been complaints from the MDC as well about the conduct of the media. singling out Newsday. What's your comment on that?
I think there are proper ways to address such concerns. It's a political party's concerns about the way journalists conduct themselves. The voluntary media council, which can afford them the platform to air their concerns, and through conciliation, those concerns can be addressed rather than threatening journalists.
That was independent Zimbabwe journalist Kowani Nyati speaking from Harare with Chris Gandhi of VOA Zimbabwe program. The World Health Organization has urged governments to protect the human rights and dignity of people with mental health disorders who suffer from stigma, discrimination, and wide-ranging abuses. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Hundreds of millions of people globally suffer from mental health problems. The World Health Organization reports the mentally ill account for 13% of the global disease burden and for one-third of all health-related disability. Studies in the United States, Britain, and Ethiopia show people with serious mental illness are dying 10 to 20 years earlier than the general population. WHO Mental Health Coordinator Michelle Funk says people with mental health problems often are shunned and neglected. She says the services they receive for their condition are generally inadequate and almost universally brutal. She says they are stripped of their human rights and dignity, elements essential for their recovery.
What we see instead is that people admitted to inpatient facilities throughout all countries in the world are exposed to violence, sexual abuse. They're restrained, they're tied down, they're left without food and water, forced to live in extremely dirty and unhygienic conditions, and simply forgotten about for years and sometimes for the rest of their life.
She notes this is a common situation in both developed and developing countries. Dr. Funk says people with mental disabilities frequently are locked up in institutions where they are isolated from society and subject to inhuman and degrading treatment. She says they often are deprived of the right to make decisions for themselves, lack access to education and employment opportunities. She says people with mental illness are set apart from the general population and are prevented from participating fully in society. The World Health Organization says poor quality care due to a lack of qualified health professionals and dilapidated facilities leads to further violations. The agency is running an awareness campaign aimed at dispelling the many myths and erroneous assumptions of the mentally ill. The WHO says many people with mental disabilities can recover if treated by trained health professionals who respect the needs of their patients and include them in the decisions that affect their lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In South Africa, young men and women from townships and villages train to make American dishes such as macaroni and cheese or mac and cheese, burgers, waffles, and disco fries at an inner-city Johannesburg restaurant that wouldn't look out of place in the American South. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Chicken coated in a batter of secret spices sizzles in oil. At the Mr. Big Stuff eatery, even the squares of macaroni and cheese, euphemistically known as mac and cheese, are deep fried. Here in the heart of Johannesburg, customers sit in booths reminiscent of an American diner. At one table, students in trendy clothes hungrily devour burgers. At another, two lawyers in black suits and frilly white court collars eat waffles topped with chicken strips. Food blogger Tando Moloketi says Mr. Big Stuff's fried chicken is the best she's tasted.
It's like the Colonel's fried chicken, but crispier, and then the sweet waffle is like light and fluffy, topped with that mustardy syrup. It's just phenomenal. It's a really good southern food more than anything else.
Co-owner Craig Durrant says the heartbeat of his business is a team of African chefs trained by an American food consultant. Zimbabwean Makosi Kumalo is one of them. He says he loves going all American by serving up burgers for breakfast. He says trying to convince some people to eat bacon with maple syrup and waffles for breakfast has indeed been challenging.
They normally used to waffles as dessert, you see.
Moloketi says the nation's ready for uniquely American food because tastes here are expanding rapidly.
A year ago, I'm not sure if people would have been as receptive to chicken and waffles, but now South Africans are kind of broadening their palate and willing to experiment with two flavors that they're used to having, but separately.
Kumalo says he's proud to be part of what he calls a food revolution and proud to be an African chef making American food.
We get Americans coming in, they're like, we only thought we could get this on in our country, you know.
As more clients line up and as more classic American tunes leak from Mr. Big Stuff's sound system, Kumalo's eyes twinkle, wondering if his bosses are ready for his recipes for deep-fried oysters and corn dogs. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Wuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Hosts Morocco and Guinea play to a 1-1 draw in Agadir as the Democratic Republic of Congo pipped Gabon 2-1 in Mones, Belgium, in friendly matches on Monday. On Sunday, Tunisia's under-23 side pipped Rwanda 1-0, while on Friday, Burkina Faso edged Rwanda 1-0 in friendly matches played in Rabat, Morocco. Today, Tuesday, Republic of Congo host Benin in Brazzaville. Algeria welcomed Senegal to Algiers. Honduras encountered the visiting South African in San Pedro, and Ghana tackle Canada in Washington, D.C. in the United States of America. Meanwhile, hosts Madagascar play the Central African Republic in the African preliminaries for the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers in Antananarivo today, Tuesday. Burundi welcome Seychelles to Bujumbura as Sierra Leone engage Chad in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. Elsewhere, Namibia host Gambia in Windhoek. Niger are at home to Somalia in Niamey. Guinea-Bissau host Liberia in Bissau. Lesotho welcome Comoro Islands to Maseru. Swaziland engage visitors Djibouti in Lobambo. Botswana engage visitors Eritrea in Francistown as South Sudan travel to Nouakchott to face Mauritania. Turning to athletics, Kenya's 22-year-old Gladys Chesire won women's race at the ASICS Grand 10-kilometer Berlin road race in the German capital in a lifetime best of 30 minutes and 41 seconds. A silver medalist in 10,000 meters at the recent All-Africa Games, Chesire not only improved her lifetime best by over 1 minute, but also ran the world's quickest time in the event this year. Meanwhile, 19-year-old world junior 10,000-meter champion Joshua Cheptegei triumphed in the men's race in a personal best and Uganda national record of 27 minutes and 50 seconds. He improves on Moses Kipsiro's previous Ugandan record by 2 seconds. In the Netherlands, Kenya's Stephen Chebogut won the DLL Eindhoven Marathon in a personal best of 2 hours, 5 minutes and 52 seconds. On Sunday, he improves his lifetime best by over 2 minutes. Meanwhile, Kenyans Stephen Ongori and Nancy Kimayo were crowned winners of the men's and women's races at the 20 kilometers Paris road race in the French capital on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Ethiopian defending champion Mukhtar Edris retained his Giro Alsace 10 kilometer road race title in Trento, Italy, in a winning time of 28 minutes and 46 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Opposition candidates are calling for Guinea's presidential election to be annulled, saying the vote Sunday was rigged to favor incumbent leader Alpha Condé. That is it for this Tuesday, October 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineers Charles Hall and Jim Harriman, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, Africa, have a lovely day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.